something about the fall. You come back from summer and you think, isn't it a joy to be together again? It's all wonderful. And then you read the readings and think, I'm going back on vacation. Every single commentary that I read this week said, essentially, good luck. Parables are meant to tell us something about what God expects and wants for us. A way of telling a story that takes it into our regular context and makes sense for us so that we can live a better life. We can live into God's life as God would want us to. And then you come along to something like this gospel reading this morning from Luke. So we're going to work through it together and see where we end up. So there's a rich man. He had a manager, and he was a jerk. Let's put it bluntly. He took people's money and clearly was squandering it. He was probably taking far more than he should have, and I expect the actual owner was not getting all that he should have. And so, as happens in communities, a rumor probably made it to the landowner, to the rich man. And he heard that his manager was a scoundrel and a thief. And of course he goes to him, but he gives him an opportunity. He says, give me an accounting of your management, because you can't be my manager any longer if you're going to keep on this way. The manager has an opportunity. It's one of those moments that we've each faced at some time and will face again in our lives, which is a moment of decision to keep doing what he's always been doing, get wealthier, and carry on, except that he's not going to get wealthier if he doesn't have a job. He might, like many of us sometimes do, cut and run, say, yeah, that I did that, or not even admit to it, and move somewhere else, and do the same thing all over again. We often do that in our lives. But he doesn't do those things. He also doesn't blame anyone or say, well, those stupid people, they should have known. He actually takes the opportunity and says to himself, what am I going to do now that my master's taking my position away from me? In other words, what am I going to do now that I've been caught? And a moment of absolute startling honesty is in this morning's gospel. I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. He's become very aware of himself, his shortcomings, and obviously his gifts of being able to manage in a whole other way. But he understands that he's not capable of digging, and he's too proud to beg. So what is his life going to look like after this? And in that moment, he realizes what's important to him. What's most important, more than his greed, more than the amassing of wealth, is that he will be welcomed into people's homes. They'll have friends. They'll have a community. That people will be able to look at him and know who he is and accept him for who he is. And he will be able to stand among them and truly be himself and be accepted. Isn't that what we all want? Our hearts long for that, to stand in a place of integrity, of beauty, of grace, and even with all our faults, know that people love us and care for us. And he had the opportunity to choose that. And so he did. He came up with a plan. So he invites the debtors. I'm sure they were quaking in their boots because they probably didn't know what was going to happen. And asks them how much they owe, and he cuts it. He says, 100 jugs of oil, great. Give us 50. Put down 50. 100 sheaves of wheat or whatever it was, containers of wheat, make it 80. And I bet he had no idea what was going to happen to him. And we actually don't know. It says that the master commended him, the dishonest manager, because he'd acted shrewdly. But we actually don't know. We don't get told in this story whether he keeps his job or not. I kind of hope he did. Because when we actually face that moment in our lives and we actually take responsibility for it, and our actions show that, one would hope that that is a moment of grace of those around us. And in that process of him discerning what he had to do, he's alone, because clearly he hasn't got any friends. He's very, very alone. Today in our parish, we're going to commission our new pastoral care team. And that is exactly why we have pastoral care and a trained pastoral care team. It's because when we face moments in our lives like that, we are alone, frankly. There's no one who can fix it for us. But what we do want is people or someone to walk with us. Not to fix it, but to journey. Not to tell us that it's all going to be great, but to reassure us that God loves us in that moment. And so that's why we do that. And that's why he so desperately wanted to be welcomed into people's homes for the rest of his life. And then there's this curious phrase in the gospel. The children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. The people of their own generation were people like the dishonest manager. They weren't necessarily religious folks. They were just regular folks. And the children of light were those who had come to Jesus, who had put their lives on the line for the gospel. The children of light are us, Christians, Anglicans, whatever you may be, who believe in God today. We're the children of light. And Jesus is saying in this parable, but the people of their own generation, not you folks, they get it. And isn't it true? It's not a church moving them or a faith community that was protesting on Friday. It was young people. It was our youth who around the world said, hey, everybody, wake up. Wake up. You have made decisions. We are making decisions that are not life-giving. And we want a future. Please listen to us. I saw a startling picture of a young woman whose name just went out of my head, who started the whole thing, sitting by herself a year ago, protesting. And on Friday, there were millions of people. And those are the people of their own generation. Those are not a group of Christians or Jews or Muslims or Hindus. All those people were probably represented there. But those were people of their own generation. They get it. And sometimes we need to pay attention. And Jesus said, make friends for yourselves by the means of dishonest wealth, so when it's gone, they may welcome you into eternal homes. Jesus is saying, you know, pay attention and do what it takes. Do what it takes to be honest and integral, even though the wealth part may not be the right way to do it. If you come to that nadir moment where you have to make an opportunity, make a choice, may it bring you to that choice. Whoever is faithful in very little is faithful in much, and whoever is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest in much. Well, that's sort of not surprising. And Jesus is saying that you need to be trusted with the true riches. So are we talking about money here? No, we're not. Wealth is not just money. We all know that. Wealth is something greater. Wealth often for us is our reputation. Wealth often is indeed what we own. Wealth is what we show to the world. Wealth is our money. Wealth is all of those things. It could be anything to any one of us and to our community. But we can't just serve those things and God. Those things need to be tools for us, not the end result. Jesus is saying, God is the end result. Living in God, living honestly, with integrity, being clear what you can do and can't do. That's true wealth, having those who love you surround you in your life. That is what the riches are of the kingdom, not the things that we assign amounts to. And so clearly we can't serve God and all those other things at the same time, but we can use those things. We can use those tools to serve others, to live out God's life through ours. As I mentioned last Sunday, and as you know, we're electing a new bishop in March. And we need to be clear about this in our church. We have a lot of wealth. You're sitting on some of it this morning, not the pew, on this property and this building. Our diocese has a lot of wealth, but we're not using it as a tool to the best and highest purpose. And we have started over the past 2 years to look at that and take care of that, but it's just started. And I hope you will pray with me that whoever we discern to be the new bishop, whoever is feeling that call upon their heart, will be able to help us move beyond where we are now, so we can have a strong and vital, even if less property, strong and vital heart and ministry and teams. All of your clergy right now are struggling to look after a building, a congregation, have new exciting programs, make sure people are cared for, and try and figure out how to keep the doors open. That's not a position of strength. That's a position of weakness. And we need to all pray for that, that we may be open to movement of the Spirit about how we can address that and who will lead us in that. If you look on your bulletin cover, you'll see some geese. And I like to think of where we're at in the church right now as we're a bunch of geese. We make a lot of honking noises sometimes. And over the years, things have changed. And so where we are right now is where those geese are at. We are not sitting on the water, and we are not in formation with a purpose. We're between that. Those geese on the front cover are in fog as well, a little bit of mist. There's some clarity, there's some mist, and the geese are forming or trying to figure out how they're gonna fly. They're off the ground, that's important. We're off the ground here as Anglicans in this diocese, but we're not flying in formation yet. And that's the next step we need to take so that we can be clear about who's in front and who's taking a break, and then who needs a break and who needs to fly in front, and purpose and decision and clarity. And to do that, we need to take our wealth, the things that we have, and use them to the highest and best purpose for God, not just to keep things going. I have no answers about that, let me be clear. And I'm certainly not going to be the next bishop, so I don't have to worry about that. But I want us to pray for each one of us, our parish, our diocese, because it's an important time that we live in. And we want to not just be children of light, but we want to be also children of our own generation who see things clearly, where we are, grounded. We live in both worlds. It's not like you step into the church and the rest of the world doesn't exist anymore, or the other way around. We are both those. And so we need to be like this manager and stand clearly and say, so what are the things that we're not able to do? And what are the things that we are able to do? And will we do those for the sake of Jesus, for the good news of the gospel, and for the betterment of our life in this world? Amen.